When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and we're back. It's 3 Yards Per Carry. It's been how long? Almost 2 months? 6 weeks? 7 weeks? Something like that, Simon?
Been a while. It's certainly been a while.
And Chris? Six, seven weeks?
It's been 43 years. Now, I did 43 years instead of the 84 years bit because today happens to be my 43rd birthday.
Wow.
Look at that. You didn't even tell us that. Genuinely didn't tell us that.
Well, I had no idea.
I wanted it on the air.
Wow. So you're the oldest among us now.
Yeah, you're the oldest. Well done. Congratulations. 53. Brilliant.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
53? Wow. Come on now.
You're not 53, no?
I'm 43.
Come on.
You think I'm 53?
I'm not saying anything.
I'm 36.
With how many anniversaries?
Yeah, 14 or so.
I think you got the numbers around the wrong way, Alf.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been off the air for so long that in that time, we have coffee now. We have a store, people. If you want to support us, and we know you want to support us because you hit me up all day today, like, my God, you guys are actually back? Like, wow, really? And some of you said, why don't you guys just go away permanently, you know? But those are our haters, which are few. Our fans are glad to support us. They're glad to hear us again. And if you want to support us, you could go to our store. And if you want to buy a hoodie, a shirt, a hat, coffee, we got a bottle opener there, okay? Mugs, a tumbler, or buy all of it. If you want to do that, you go to onlyfans.printify.me/products. And you can check out all our stuff there. I will put a link on every single one of our shows, so you could just click on it and shop away. And of course, if you want to become a member of our Discord, where we are all the time, and we will be pretty much for the next 10 months or so until we take another hiatus, you can go to discord.gg/onlyfins and become a member there for $3 a month. And of course, they're back. And I checked this. This is their fifth year with us, and that's Prize Picks. Use the promo code 5, FIVE. We will have a special promo code, by the way, for the regular season. For whatever reason, they changed the promo code for us during the regular season. Last year, it was 3 yards. The year before, it was 3YPC. This year, I'm lobbying for 3 yards, so it's the same. But you can use 5 for now, FIVE. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's as simple as that. Of course, betteredge.com. You go to betteredge.com/5 reasons. That's the number 5 reasons. You get $25 there just for signing up. And we will have another ad in the middle of the show. All right, let's get this started. First of all, where have you all been? Have everybody catch up with what you've done with yourself for the last 2 months or so. Simon.
Before I do that, I just want to say two things. When you said tumbler, I thought you were going to say tumble dryer. And I thought, wow, we've moved into white goods. Like, I just thought we were doing t-shirts and hoodies. It's like,
oh,
wow,
I can sell everything. Okay. You're not going to sell underwear, right? Like, the company that is working with us, like, they'll make underwear for us.
You heard it here first. We're going to get used Alf underwear on the 3YPC merchandise page.
I'll tell you what we could call those pants as well. 3 stains per carry.
Yep.
Stains per load.
Oh, boy.
Point number two. We've already gone there already. We've only been back on the air 10 minutes. The second point is that I don't know if any of the representatives from Manscaped are listening, our wonderful old sponsor, but my Manscaped lawnmower has died, and I'm desperate for a new one. So if you want to, like, if you fancy sponsoring the show again for the new season, I mean, last season was the biggest season we've ever had. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So if you wanted to come on board and perhaps send me one of those new shaper thingy, shavery, doobry, I don't. The ball stuff I don't need, the body nut toner, I'm good with that. But the shaver thing is an absolute lifesaver, or a life shaver, in fact. So if you wanted to send me one of those, Mr. or Mrs. Manscaped, if you're listening, we'd love to have you back. I used to love the old Manscaped adverts, and what a product. And I'm not just saying, they're not even sponsoring the show. I just want one of those shaver
They
things.
might be back, by the way. Stay tuned.
We can get them like basically every other year, just so that we can, get the updated version of
Yes.
the lawnmower.
Yes. I'm all about that life. Where have I been? I've not been anywhere, actually. I've got holidays upcoming, which is convenient given that we head to. I'm actually not going to be here the first part of the season. I'm going to be abroad, and then I'm going to be in New York with my kids because it's their Christmas present. Never been to New York. So instead of having to spend extortionate amounts of cash on trainers and clothes because they're late teenagers, now I've got to spend extortionate amounts of money on American burger meat and the Manhattan's tourist tax. So thanks for that, whoever the mayor is. So yeah, I haven't been anywhere, but Chris has been gallivanting all around the world, apparently.
Oh, and
Yeah,
by
I've
the
been
way, when you go, before I interrupt, sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but when you go to New York this time, they will have proper garbage bins. I don't know if you are aware of that.
I wasn't, but as somebody who is very genuinely has a fear of rats, the idea
Oh,
that
and you're going to New York?
well,
Good
but
luck.
I'm okay because touch wood, I've been to New York 4 times and I've never seen a rat. Or I might have seen a rat once, but that was inside a vending machine in the subway. But my kids think it's hilarious. They like send me rat videos and stuff. Like a rat, there was a rat on a subway car, and they think it's hilarious sending that to me. And rats running around the street, like dancing and all that sort of stuff. But
Yeah, I was on Twitter and it never ceases to amaze me. A lot of people from Europe were saying, "Wait a minute, they don't have bins in America." And I'm like, "No, that's a New York thing. It's
yeah.
New York has famously just thrown their garbage bags right on the sidewalk." But that has changed. They have bins now. So,
What an upgrade.
yeah, right?
Wow, we really are moving into the 21st century.
Yeah, we
Well,
really
you know
are.
what I had to contend with. So I have been traipsing around Europe for the last couple of weeks. I went to Barcelona, which is a great city. Fell in love with it, absolutely. Then I went cruising around and went to France and Florence, Italy, and Corsica, and finished up at Ibiza, and then came back to Barcelona a little bit. And the only thing that I had to contend with negatively the whole time was when we got back to Barcelona, it was just in time for evidently the locals in Barcelona to be protesting all of the tourists, me being
Ah,
one
of
of them.
course, yeah.
They knew I was coming, I guess, and that, so they went around town with squirt guns, squirting all the tourists that were sitting, in outdoor seating in cafes and restaurants.
They are aware that that's like kind of fun.
I mean, I thought we should just have a nice big squirt, leave it to an American to think of, to turn this into a gun battle. But I was like, hey, listen, let's get our squirt guns. We'll have an all-out shooting war
I
here.
didn't realize that you'd been to Florence and Italy as well. Italy is beautiful.
Yeah. Florence was one of our stops on the cruise, and
Nice.
so actually it was Marina di Carrara, but we drove into Florence and spent the day there.
Nice.
And Florence is phenomenal.
Oh, it's spectacular, isn't it? It's a
Yeah,
beautiful. Italy is so beautiful.
it
So
is. The
beautiful.
Italian countryside, or the Tuscan countryside,
Yeah.
that really is. It lives up to
Oh,
its
doesn't it?
reputation.
It is
Yeah.
special. It's a
Yeah, I've
great
heard
place.
it's very economical, by the way. I've heard about
Well,
Italy.
the food in Florence was, and Florence is like an open air, I mean, they call it an open air museum, and it absolutely is that. I mean, it's like walking through an through the streets and you're bumping into a 2,000-year-old statue. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty amazing.
How are the illicit drugs in Ibiza, Chris?
Oh, plenty of them. Don't remember any of it. You know, went and partied at a club that's built into a mountainside. And so there was like an outdoor, there was outdoor music. Interestingly enough, for all the reputation that it has, they don't allow outdoor music beyond 11 p.m. over there. So when you get to 11 o'clock, a lot of like outdoor club spaces have to move indoors. And luckily this place, like their indoors is like built into caves in a mountain. So, you know, past 11 p.m., it just turns into a large, packed club with inside of these caves. And that was phenomenal. Had some Balinese food, street food there. Some of the best stuff I've ever tasted, really. It was great overall.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like Key West, there's all kinds of hedonistic activities going on, but at 2:30 in the morning they tell you to go back to your hotel room or get arrested.
Yeah. You know? Well, luckily the ship was parked there overnight, so it was like one of those things where you could go out as late as you wanted to and you know, come back to the ship and sleep and then still go back out there and enjoy the beaches the next day if you get up.
Yeah, well, yeah. I won a Stanley Cup while I was away. Yeah, took me 30 years, but I finally did it. I got to go to Finland. Have you ever been to Finland, Simon?
I haven't. I've been to, in Scandinavia, I've been to Denmark and Norway, and I'm going to Sweden quite a lot over the next few months because I'm doing a big documentary series for the World Service, which is based in Sweden, but I've never been to Finland.
Yeah, well, there's I believe six of them on the Florida Panthers, so I gotta go pay homage. That was so much fun. Yeah, you should have seen that parade. Got me to thinking, you know, when the hell are we gonna see our parade with the Dolphins? And then it made me a little sad. Like every single team down here has won a championship, every single one of them. And in fact, Messi might bring an MLS up down here too before the Dolphins win their first. Although it's looking up, but they've fallen behind. And well, this is the podcast that we do, so we're gonna get going on this.
Oh, we're on topic.
Yeah. We're transitioning here away from the Florida Panthers and the glorious Stanley Cup victory to what is it now? It's 52 years, 50, 51 years, 51 years of futility. And the last time they've been to a Super Bowl was in the January of 1985. Jesus Christ, that's 40 years ago. It was 1984 season, so yeah, 40 years ago was the last time they went to a Super Bowl. Hopefully they can do that this year, but it's going to have to start with some changes on the offense. Simon, you got to speak with our head coach, a guy that we happen to like, and a guy who has some, he has a lot to prove this year, because you can lay some of the failures at the end of the season to injury, the defense, the quarterback. But some would say that the coach left some to be desired. You got to speak with them in Frankfurt. You got sound on this. You want to introduce this clip?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, some of our podcast friends have been doing great interviews. We saw Carl Krabs had Kurt Warner, and the guy Schaus and his guys had Tyreek Hill on, which is unbelievable. But we obviously spoke to Mike McDaniel at length in Germany, and one of the questions that he answered sort of resonated with kind of one of the things that a lot of the national broadcasters have been doing. You know, I listened to Mina Kimes the other day talking about, you know, what was going to happen with the Dolphins offense, what changes were going to be made, what was the great kind of magician going to cook up in the offseason for defenses around the league. And that was really a question I asked McDaniel back in Frankfurt. So we thought we'd play you a little bit of it.
And here is that sound.
Obviously, there's a reason for the evolution, but I wondered in terms of the speed of the evolution, whether that was down to Tua's own comfort level, whether that was down to your evolution as a play designer and a play caller, and whether or not we're working on the next iteration of the scheme to stay one step ahead of people like Steve Spagnuolo.
You know, I don't... In principle, Like, I really don't look at it as my scheme at all. It's the furthest thing from it. What it is, you know, we're taking elements of what people do well and trying to really lean into that. So the evolution is really centered around what finding out what your players are good at and evolving in that direction. So quite literally, the scheme is a result of the players. So in terms of that forecasting of like, you know, being a schematic guru or something, I see it far from that. I think it's the product looks good because people know what they're doing, are fully invested in it. And, you know, there's some movement and things of that nature, but the orchestration works because you know how much deliberate practice it takes to time up motions with concepts and have footwork from the quarterback timed up with the footwork of the receiver and the aiming points of each combination block tied to the runner. All of those things, from our offensive staff standpoint, we're just opening our eyes, watching our players, and kind of adapting to them. So I think that, you know, it's kind of always, that's how I've always kind of looked at it. Last year was tricky because you only know this much about your guys and you're learning on the fly. And you learn fast. Oh yeah, he didn't like that, or he's uncomfortable with that. Receiver, running back, right guard, you're doing the same thing, which is trying to utilize players' talents in a cohesive manner to be able to, as 11 people, move as one. So I think that it, the evolution of the offense, it really comes down to the evolution, the coaches getting a better idea of what guys are good at, and then guys really truly going after the opportunity, not being satisfied with results, but really chasing that unattainable level of perfection that, you know, when you have a group of guys that are never satisfied and always want to have, okay, what can I do better? You have a chance to be your best selves for sure. So that's what I think we're all seeing, and we're all watching we're all along for the ride watching our players play.
So that was our head coach Mike McDaniel on 3 yards per carry speaking to me back in Frankfurt. And Chris, I've listened to that a few times, obviously, but I always find it really instructive, especially the first half where he talks about the fact that, I mean, there's multiple layers to that answer that he gave, that sort of 4 minute answer. But one of the things I found most instructive was how the scheme is not his scheme. It is essentially built to the benefit and the talents of the players. And I suppose you look at the players that we've added now in the offseason, you know, what are they going to cook up for a Jalen Wright? What are they going to cook up for an Odell Beckham? What are they going to cook up for a Jonnu Smith? You know, what are they going to cook up for the two Washington rookies in terms of Taj and Malik, especially Malik, who brings that kind of, you know, yards after catch mentality that McDaniel loves so much. And I found that part of what he had to say really instructive.
Yeah, I think what it brings to mind, though, is the importance of the continuity between the players in the scheme in multiple years. Because, I mean, he's basically saying right there that the scheme changes that you saw and the evolution that you saw from 1 year to the next, from 22 to 23, is because they know those players better. And you can't do that unless, you know, you have the same players. From 1 year to the next, you know, players that you have learned 1 year and now you get to scheme with the next year. He says specifically that he was that in the previous year in 22, they were learning on the fly. And so I think that really brings to mind some of the importance, because we talk about, we tend to talk every off season. We tend to probably give a little bit too much airspace, I think, or a little bit too much oxygen about the newcomers to an offense, right? And we, you know, now we're going to talk about Odell Beckham. We're going to talk about Jonnu Smith, as you said before. And I think that these coaches probably get a little more excited than we might think about the same players that they had last year that they know a little bit better now, that now they get to get into the lab and really design things around what they know and have learned about these players. And I think that that's really important. It gets overlooked by the fans. You know, we talk about it sometimes in terms of like development. We talk about it that a lot of the times the actual improvement that you see in a team isn't from newcomers. It's not from those guys. It's actually from the existing players and how they come to be developed. And I think that part of that development is actually the fact that they know them better and can now plan around them a little bit better. And so, we're going to talk about Aaron Brewer. We're going to talk about Odell Beckham, Jonnu Smith, maybe, you know, Jalen Wright, Jody Fortson, Jack Driscoll, guys that they've acquired that are new. But really, what about the fact that, you know, they're a year better, or a year further in knowledge of what, you know, guys like, even on the offensive line, guys like Austin Jackson and Isaiah Wynn can do, you know, what a year further in the knowledge of what Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are good at, what Julian Hill can do. You know, Devon Achane is the big, I think, the elephant in the room there, because he is a young developing player in addition to knowing him a year better. I think that's real. That's the real bullseye on that, and that whole effect. But I think that that's what I come away when I listen to them.
Now, one thing that kind of confuses me about the next iteration of this offense is I thought that they would want to get to other things in the playbook. We know they don't run too many pass pro sets. Like, you can count them on one hand in some games. They don't run lead. They don't run power too much, although they had some success with it earlier in the season. They seem to be leaning basically into their older philosophy or their current philosophy, the way they do things down here, the way they run offense, because they kind of doubled down on some of their old ways, let's say. They didn't really go out and get a guy to run leads behind at right guard. They just let Robert Hunt go. They didn't really go out and, you know, try to change the way they play football. They didn't try to improve on the offensive line to be a better pass pro set offensive line. They kind of just said, you know what, we got to do what we do now, but just do it better. So they leaned on getting another guy into the offense that they could throw design passes to in Jonnu Smith. And they're improving third down with Malik Washington and Odell Beckham. And if the improvement's just going to come in doing what they did before, but doing it better, because there's some numbers to suggest that the third and one problem was actually worse than we even let on. If they're going to do that, then why not? You know, it's the old, you know, what's not broke, don't fix it. Just do it better. I think just running the football more. And now that you've added Jalen Wright to the mix, and think about it. There was a time here where we were counting on Jeff Wilson to be RB2. He's now RB4 on this depth chart. If they're just going to do that alone, and now that they can expand the offense into playing a little bit more 11 personnel and having the tight end be a seam threat and also be a threat in design passes, yeah, I think that that's going to make them a lot better. Now that they're not going to really run power or leads on third and one, they're just going to have to find a new way to skin the cat, because it seems like it's a double down on the old philosophy, but with better players and a more diverse approach to how they're going to get to those things. You agree, Simon?
Yeah. Do you think they're going to throw more out of bigger sets in terms of the fact they'll have more tight ends on the field, but they're just going to be more diverse in what they do in the passing game because of the threat of Smith? Or do you think they're just going to have Smith in the slot the whole time and just try and hit him vertically down the seam and those sorts of things? Or do you think there's going to be some of that kind of iteration might come out of bigger jumbo sets in terms of, just trying to get Smith open?
Yeah, this offense looked last year like they were just stuck in 21 and then occasionally 11, and then they weren't as diverse as we would think that they would be. I think they could do a little bit more 12 personnel now and have it be a little bit more believable for defenses and have defenses defend them a little bit more honestly. And then, while they're defending them honestly, they can get to other things in their playbook that they're just going to keep leads and power out of their game plan. That's just their philosophy. They decided not to spend on a right guard. They decided to run it back at left guard. So they're kind of telling you what they think about their playbook as far as what they want to get to on third and one. They think that they have the right set of plays. They just need to get better players and do it a little bit differently. Try to not necessarily fool people, but give a more diverse look. It
Well,
might have become a bit stale last season.
what I wonder if sort of the cutting edge that they're going to stay on offensively will have to do with tempo. Because, like, when I look at what they've done in setting up the offense, particularly with the wide receiver unit and the addition of Odell Beckham is a three receiver position guy. He's not, he's not Malik Washington, the newcomer, the new draftee who is a slot guy in college, and I'll be damned if he's going to be anything but a slot guy as a rookie in the NFL, right? Braxton Berrios, what was he for them? Only slot. That's all he can play in their system. But now they have Odell Beckham, and he's a three position guy. In addition to Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, who we already knew were three position guys, right? Tyreek Hill could go to the slot anytime. Jaylen Waddle, what was he his rookie year in the NFL for the Dolphins? But like an OJ McDuffie like slot guy, which was very confusing, but also he was somewhat effective there. So they have three guys that can play anywhere, and what I think that gives you the opportunity to do is to mess with tempo. And to bring the defense or to not allow the defense to sub in and out as much, to hit them with a little bit more up tempo stuff, and to hurry up to the line because you have that diversity in how you can line up still and how you can call the plays. But you don't have to shuffle guys in and out of the lineup in order to do it. So I kind of wonder if that gives them the opportunity to work with that a little bit more, but at the same time, you look at Jonnu Smith, the addition of Jonnu Smith and Jody Fortson, who doesn't get talked about as much, but I think that he is going to be part of this. You look at those guys and you start seeing, okay, but also they can still be situational. They can still be situational in the red zone with Jody Fortson, who is, for as little action as he's probably gotten in the NFL. All of his action is basically touchdown. and so you really do legitimately have probably the best pure red zone specialist in terms of pass catchers that we've had since going back a couple of years to when Mike Gesicki was here. And they tried to make Mike Gesicki work, but at the end of the day, all he was good at for us in this offense was really just being that red zone guy, and he caught five touchdowns, and we haven't had a somebody that could do that since then. So I think that they still have the ability to be kind of situational with guys like Jonnu Smith, who's kind of good in between the 20s, and Jody Fortson, who's good in the red zone. But I think that with that wide receiver unit, those three guys, that's where I think it's really going to get interesting in terms of keeping everybody on the field, keeping the same personnel on the field, but and then just suddenly hitting the defense with hurry up and tempo stuff. And that kind of is where I see the next stage in development is exploring that.
You guys are not concerned at all that they've essentially decided power leads. That's not in our playbook. We're not doing that around here.
Concerned about third and one, as you
Yeah,
talked about.
again,
Again.
they're screaming at us. We just have to do it better.
There's got to be a plan for that, though. There's got they will have had to have gone. I mean, I know for a fact they will have gone into a big old shell and worked out what's the best way of working out third and one. Because actually, early on in McDaniel's tenure, it worked really well, especially the motioning Smythe or Ingold and just running a little, quarterback sneak with it. They've got to find a way to how can they move the pile? Is that Chris Brooks? Is that something with tight ends? Is that just a mentality mindset of the offensive line? Is that getting Tua moving? Is that part of the reason why he's lost lost some weight? Is that excuse me, is that some sort of trickeration pitches to these speedy running backs? Those misdirection pitches where Tua turns left, pitches back right. Is it quick throws to these little slot guys, the two Washington kids, but that's an awful lot to pile on them. Is that, contested catch balls to Fortson? What is the plan for third down? How do they improve that? Because the amount of points they left on the field last year because they couldn't convert, and the year before, they couldn't convert on third and one, fourth and short, third and short, et cetera, just became ridiculous. They've got to be better in that situation.
You wonder if part of that answer could tie into what I was saying about substitutions and tempo, because could you imagine situations where you get listen, if you've got a pass defense on the field, a pass defense personnel on the field for first, second down, and then you do run into a third and one situation, if Miami hurries up with the exact same personnel, then maybe they feel like they can put a defense at a disadvantage because the defense can't sub out and get the short yardage package out there. Or maybe they feel like the defense has to overcommit to, because something that the Miami has had extraordinary success with, for all the woes of their third and short, is on those third and short plays. They really victimize defenses with passes over the top, right? They will hit them with a deep pass to Tyreek Hill on a short yardage third down when you're not really expecting that. And it's part of why they still have, I think, good potency numbers on those third and short situations, just not good conversion numbers, if that makes sense. So I don't know, something about the tempo and personnel and not allowing the defense to actually sub, maybe they feel like they can put the defense in a bad situation on those third downs with tempo. I don't, it's just we're just throwing shit at the wall. We don't know the answer,
But it's
to
exciting
be
though,
honest.
isn't it? It's exciting. You look at the, these new players and these new, there's clearly a plan on the offensive line because they, once again, Chris Greer doesn't believe that it's as serious an issue as we as fans believe it to be, and as most professional analysts believe it to be. So, what's going to happen? But the, all these new players, it almost feels like we're rebuilding, yet we're not. Do you know what I mean? It feels like we're obviously a playoff team. But it feels like there's so many new faces when you look at, both sides of the ball. But, Jalen and Wright and Odell Beckham and, the two Washington kids and Fortson and Jonnu Smith and on the offensive line with Brewer and with Jack Driscoll, and Patrick Paul. And then defensively with Calais Campbell and Gallagher. And, I mean, you go through Jonathan Harris, Benito Jones, Mack, Taiir Tart, Shaquille Barrett, Jordan Brooks. Like, it's almost like a, the turnover's been so huge that it's almost like we've had to rebuild, even though we're, a playoff team and, a really good playoff team. Whereas it kind of all these names that have come in, all the ones that departed, do you think that we'd have had the second pick in the draft and we finished sort of 3-14 or whatever it was? So it's
It's
interesting.
exciting.
It
I
is
agree with
exciting.
you.
It is exciting.
And one more thing, just to toss in there, and I thought it was quite revealing in a way that players and coaches are usually taught not to be revealing when they're speaking to the press. But Devon Achane, he did talk about pretty explicitly how he was essentially running with the wide receivers. In OTAs and mini camps and such. He was essentially cross training and practicing with the wide receivers. And I thought that was interesting because he did line up outside of the backfield, not as a running back. He lined up on the line of scrimmage somewhere a third of the time, which is It's a pretty high number for a third of your snaps as a running back to be off at the line of scrimmage somewhere and not in the backfield.
Yeah, you go back to that deep Tyreek Hill touchdown against Washington, that not the one where he comes over his shoulder, but the first one. Achan is split as the Z to the top of the screen, and if Tua looks the other way, he's got like 5 or 6 yards ahead of his corner, and that's a walk-in touchdown to him down that side. So there definitely could be an iteration of the offense, Chris, as you talked about for 18 months, where that involves him much more as a receiver, especially with such a guy like Jalen Wright, who's really just a bigger Devon Achan, isn't he? Less tread on the tires.
Right. And he doesn't have the experience at Tennessee really working at the line of scrimmage or wide receiver, but you know,
he led the SEC 2 years running in yards per carry. So all of a sudden you're bringing in a home run hitting running back who runs in the 4.3s, who's led the biggest conference in yards per carry over 2 seasons, doesn't have the injury issues, is trusted on third down. Oh, and you know, what does that mean for Achan in terms of what we do with him? Because we already know he can line up as a receiver. We already know he's got great hands. We already know he can run routes. So, you know, perhaps that's another iteration of the offense.
And I think what was missing for Achan last year, and what's so important about is, you know, revealing that he's basically cross-training at a position, is what was missing for him is we know he's got good hands and we know he's fast and we know he's a playmaker and he's got the kind of the building blocks to be good that way. But he didn't really always know what he was doing out there, you know, and you could see that on the film whenever we would go and dissect and, you know, what went wrong and stuff like that. There were definitely instances where Achan didn't seem to know what he was doing and from what he was being asked to do as a receiver. And if that's a big incremental change for him this year, and especially if they are going with more of this, you know, a little bit of tempo and keeping the same guys on the field and using them in different ways, moving them around in different ways, but keeping the same guys so that the defense can't sub out. You know, that could really be a source of some success for them.
All right. And I'm really excited, by the way, and we're going to get into this big time next week as we preview training camp, but I'm really excited with what Anthony Weaver is going to produce on the defensive side of the ball, because if he's just telling us what we want to hear, then he's really good at it. But he knocks every single interview right out of the park, right down from confirming that Jalen Ramsey will play pretty much everywhere and probably start in the slot, which is where he should have. And I've speculated before that last year one of the contentious conversations probably was with Chris Greer, although I'm told that Chris Greer is not confrontational with those that are under his employ. But if I were Chris Greer, I would have called in Vic Fangio. I would have said, look, my $23 million cornerback, I want him doing more, not less. Well, it seems like that $23 million cornerback is going to be doing a lot more this coming season. We're going to get into all of that next week. We're going to go to break right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what everybody else is talking about. It's essentially on loop on ESPN and Fox Sports 1 right now. But first, these words.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 10 for 10 on items like Lay's Stacks, Rice-A-Roni, and Sparkling Ice Sparkling Water for $1 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so Premier Kitchen, Bath, and Laundry Cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 five-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. Before we get into what you all know we are going to get into, when we were gone, they signed Calais Campbell. They signed Marcus May. I don't think we're going to do 30 minutes on this, but briefly touch on the two signings, Simon. I'm over the moon with both. Calais Campbell was really, really productive. He's 1,000 years old. He's a pretty effective 1,000 years. So he'll help them. He'll help them play a lot of those even fronts that they were really successful at last year. That's going to mitigate somewhat the loss of Christian Wilkins. It does not replace him, but they're trying to replace Christian Wilkins with about three guys to play his 1,000 snaps. Calais Campbell's a pretty nice part of that. I like what they've done. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, no, I think he's an excellent signing. You know, comes home to pretty much to end his career. But like you say, I mean, you said it already. He allows him to play formations slightly differently. He fills a hole both as a player on the field and as a leader. And is there a drop off from the peak of Calais Campbell 5, 6, 7 years ago? Yes, of course. But it's not as significant a drop off as it is at his age compared to players who are in their late 20s, early 30s. He's still playing at an extremely high level, did so last year, keeps himself in perfect shape, is always available, and is just going to bring that kind of mentality. He's exactly the sort of player that Anthony Weaver's looking for on that defensive line. And same with May. Bags of experience, has played all over the league, understands defense, has a nose for the football. He makes interceptions even with his butt cheeks, as we saw. You know, he's always had good sort of play recognition skills. He can play center field. He's rangy. He can get sideline to sideline. And you know, you always have to be aware of him in the vertical passing game. And I think he's going to be a really good it's just going to be fascinating to see what Weaver does in terms of, you know, we know that they played a lot of three safeties on the back end in his time at Baltimore when he was there. And, you know, we talked about at the back end of the season last year. What's going to happen to Javon Holland? Where's he going to play? Is he going to be a bit of a Swiss Army knife like Kyle Hamilton? Is he going to play single high? Is he going to be roving about all over the place? Is he going to be a robber, you know, that sort of linebacker level? What's he going to do? And then what does Marcus May free him up to do in terms of that? You know, where else do guys like Jordan Poyer, are they going to play those three safeties with May and Poyer and Holland on the field? What does it mean for Elijah Campbell? What does it mean for the rookie, Patrick McMorris? Will Nick Needham play some safety? You know, will Jalen Ramsey play some safety? Are they going to move Ramsey around all over the place? You know, because on the outside, you know, I assume that Cam Smith's going to get a lot of snaps on the outside. Obviously, Kendall Fuller is. Kade Kohu needs that bounce back year. So it'll be, again, as fascinating as the offense is, the defense is similarly stacked.
And they have a 6'3", 215-pound cornerback that they signed as a UDFA whose main calling card is being physical. I don't think he's staying at cornerback in Isaiah Johnson, so I'm interested to see where he slots in as well behind all these guys. Chris?
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the coaching staff to with all of these guys that you've mentioned, because what I see in them is a lot of you know, there is versatility, but there's going to be a lot of pressure on the coaches to fit them all in the right spots and to do it on a down for down basis situationally. And so, I mean, because, you know, just looking at the defensive line that they have now between Zach Sealer, you know, Zach Sealer, T.R. Tart, Calais Campbell, Deshaun Hand, Benito Jones, Neville Gallimore, Jonathan Harris. Those are probably the guys worth mentioning, whereas the other four guys, you know, Brandon Peely, Leonard Payne, Mario Kendricks, Isaiah Mack, those kind of guys, those are definitely going to be kind of bubble developmental guys. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to on the coaching staff to fit it all together very situationally, because what does Calais Campbell do really well? You know, he plays kind of a closed end sometimes, you know, particularly in Baltimore. He plays kind of a little bit on the outside, like almost like a five technique at times. And by the way, if you want to get excited about Calais Campbell and that addition, all you have to do is go on, you know, the Dolphins website and listen to him basically teach school on how to play defensive line. It's something. It is absolutely something. And he is, you know, I don't think you can question that addition, especially at that price tag, which is ridiculous. So, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of pressure for them to figure out how they all fit together. I mean, if you think about the offensive side, what we just got done with, as you learn these players, you fit the defense around them, or you fit the system around them, right? The system is really just a matter of learning the players and learning what they do. Well, on the defensive side, anyway, you do have some new guys out there. You have Calais Campbell now. You have T.R. Tart. You have Benito Jones. You have, you know, Neville Gallimore and Jonathan Harris. And you have Chop Robinson now. And that's a big addition. And I think that they had a specific vision in mind for him, but Shaq Barrett is a newcomer. There's going to be a lot of pressure. Jordan Brooks is going to be such a big piece in the linebackers unit, and yet he's new. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to figure out what it is everybody does, because that is going to resemble a lot more what Mike McDaniel was talking about in 22 when they were kind of trying to come up with everything on the fly, because they're learning as they're going with all these players. And I think on defense, that's going to be the case. That is exactly what's going to be the case. They have so many newcomers and they have so many multiple pieces that fit in all these different ways. And in the secondary, I think they have a lot of versatility, which is a very good thing, because it means that they can, they have variable options. So yes, you know, Jalen Ramsey can help them figure out, for example, how they need to be using Kendall Fuller, or figure out how they need to be using Cam Smith, or if Ethan Bonner is good enough to be on the field a lot. They're going to need to figure that out. And so I think the versatility of Jalen Ramsey will help that out. I'm interested to see how this Nick Needham at safety experiment is going. Although the signing of Marcus May kind of may give us a little bit of an early indication of, okay, maybe we want to steer toward the guy that's made, you know, upwards of $30 million in his career and has a lot of, you know, has a lot of experience. So yeah, it's going to be wild to see it all play out. But definitely pressure packed to me on the coaches in particular.
Yeah, I look at this defense and it's just, you know, it's so much deeper. And, you know, it's understood, you know, they had to get a little bit deeper considering what happened last year and what they're going into this season with Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb maybe not being available to start the season. But we're going to get into all of that next week when we preview camp, because there's some interesting battles, especially on defense, and some guys that, man, I'm kind of confused on, like, what's, you know, what's going to happen with Kader Kohu? You know, what is Anthony Walker here to do? Is Channing Tindall dead man walking? They got eight guys that you could reasonably think make the roster as edge players. You know, who is Zeke Vandenberg, and why is he here for a third year? You know what I mean? Like, there's plenty to talk about. Grayson Murphy, good player. I want to see him in camp as well. We're going to have to talk, you know, we're going to have plenty to talk about next week when we preview camp. But before we do that, there's 14 days left before guys report for camp. I've been on pretty much every podcast that's ever, you know, taken to the air for the last 6-7 weeks. And I've always said the same thing. I think there's three real deadlines. First deadline is the 23rd when veterans report for training camp. Second deadline is when they play their first preseason game. And the third deadline is the week of Jaguars, Jacksonville Jaguars here in Miami for week one. I think nothing gets done with Tua Tagovailoa by then. Then it's extremely highly likely that he plays on the fifth year option. And they could have an issue on their hand, and an issue that more likely than not doesn't end well for them. Your thoughts, Simon? What the hell can be holding this contract up? You have all the information out there.
I wish. I was told 6 weeks ago and reported it on OnlyFans that the Dolphins and Tua's camp are significantly far apart on guaranteed money. The Dolphins, it's a business, okay? And I know that there are lots of people invested in why isn't the deal done and why isn't it happening and he deserves this and he deserves that. And to a greater or lesser extent, he does. But, you know, it's also a business and it's not just about one player. And as he said, the market is the market, but the market is different for Tua because, you know, the Dolphins do not believe, at least my understanding is that the Dolphins do not believe that or are concerned that, concern is probably the wrong word, that's too strong, but one healthy year in seven is a worry, a concern. It is a concern, you know, and last year was a success in terms of both on the field and, you know, staying on the field. But, you know, whilst Tua can stand there and say the market is the market, injuries are injuries. And that has been an issue. And I think that the Dolphins are concerned about piling too much guaranteed money into somebody who they are not guaranteed, who is not guaranteed to be on the field always. You know, we know how close he came to walking away 18 months ago. You know, and as was reported on this podcast, it was very close. So I think that's the sticking point. I think that an educated guess would say that the Dolphins have a cutoff date, potentially. I don't think they want this to run into the season. I think either a deal gets done before the season or he plays on the fifth year and then they try and get something sorted in the off-season with the knowledge that the possibility is that the numbers could go way up. You know, and I think that's something that they're prepared for. But obviously that takes a leap of faith on both sides. Then there is the question about whether or not Tua makes a stand himself. You know, would he hold out? Would he hold out in camp? Would he hold out and not play? It doesn't strike me as that's the guy that he is, but I did sense a significant tone change in mini camps in terms of his dealings with the press. He was pissed off. He was angry. You could tell he was. And I thought it was really interesting. He was lacking in, you know, we've all been around him at press conferences and things, and he lacked the eye contact that normally he delivers when he's talking to you. And I think that there is trouble behind the scenes, at least some trouble, and I'm not sure that it's going to get resolved anytime soon. My understanding from 2 or 3 weeks ago, which is the last time I heard anything, was that they weren't close at all, really, in terms of the guaranteed number. I don't know if that's changed. It may, you know, tomorrow morning there might be an announcement that he's signed a contract and I look an idiot, and that's absolutely fine. It wouldn't be the first time, but my understanding from a couple of weeks ago is that they were still a ways off, and you know, the decisions come on both sides. Do you let him play on the fifth? Do you give him the contract and he gets hurt? Do you let him play on the fifth and he blows it out of the league, blows it out of the water, wins an MVP, Dolphins win the Super Bowl, and you end up paying him, you know, Mahomes kind of money? Or does he hold out? So, Chris, it's going to be fascinating. It's another fascinating facet of this team.
Yeah, the only thing about letting him play out the fifth to me is that, like, I don't see good scenarios from there. I only see bad ones, you know. Like, and at some point, you have to kind of play out the scenario analysis. And and say, you know, listen, if Tua Tagovailoa is not the quarterback for this team, and this is something that you could potentially find out if you let him play out on the fifth year and before, you know, you give him all that money. If Tua Tagovailoa is not the quarterback of this team, then that will essentially spark an entire rebuild. And I know that people don't want to think about that, but that is the sort of reality. The timeline of this roster, the time horizon that they were built for, is one where Tua is the guy for now and for the future. And so if that's not happening, then all of a sudden you're back to the sort of the square one at the quarterback position that the Dolphins were in for upwards of 20 years. With that quarterback position. And so you're already kind of, you know, okay, well, if that would be the shit hits the fan moment. And so I wonder about the wisdom of playing out the fifth year in preparation for that sort of doomsday scenario when it's already going to be a doomsday scenario if it plays out that way. So I kind of wonder about that. I think that there's the other scenarios that you're looking at for playing out the fifth year is I look at the history in the case of Lamar Jackson. The Baltimore Ravens forced him to play out that fifth year, and it didn't go so well. I mean, there was an acrimonious negotiations process going on that was fought very much out in the press between the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. It didn't go well. And then when it came to that year that he was forced to play the fifth year option, he did miss a significant amount of time with a, I believe it was a PCL injury, that frankly some former players and some former coaches such as Sean Payton questioned very strongly his missing the playoffs with that injury. These are people that have been around that injury, maybe even played on that injury in the past, and they certainly questioned his commitment, I guess, to the team by missing the playoffs. And the flip side of that is, and you had people like Robert Griffin coming to his aid, and they were very right to do so, is he did not have the financial commitment to take those sorts of risks. And that brings us back to the point of Tua Tagovailoa, who has an injury history, not just with the catastrophic hip, and not just with the concussions, which were a very serious issue, but he's had injury histories with things like ankles and fingers and, you know, and shoulders and stuff like that. And so what happens? Does he feel like he has the financial security and commitment from the team to play the full year or to take risks with his body, you know, when we come into those most important moments of the season, and maybe he is dealing with a you know, cracked ribs, or he's dealing with an ankle injury, or he's dealing with a knee, or he's dealing with, you know, something to do something in the shoulder. You know, that what's that going to look like? And I know a lot of people, you know, they kind of get their backs up and they're, well, you know, if he doesn't play, then he's not the guy for us, you know, and stuff like that. And I just think that that's a kind of a Pyrrhic victory that you're looking at, and it's not going to help anybody. So I don't want him to play on that fifth year option. I see nothing but bad. You know, because the other thing is, you know, what if he does play well, and then you're paying a whole lot more money than you would have this offseason. On the other hand, I don't think we passed any deadlines. And Alf, I think you had the correct deadlines there. I don't think we passed any of that. I think mid-July is when everybody has, you know, has said these deals typically get done sometime around mid-July, sometime around, you know, right before camp comes around, and I don't think we've passed any of those points yet. So it's not the time to worry all that much yet. I think the posturing going on, yes, they are far apart, or they are apart on the guaranteed money. There's kind of a little bit of conflicting reports between Jeremy Fowler and Jeff Darlington about whether they're in the ballpark on the total compensation, you know, the essentially the pay scale. And if they're fine there, or if they're close enough on that, then I think that the guaranteed money is the most manipulatable part of the whole negotiation. And that's good, because guaranteed money is not all the same thing. You know, there's like five different forms of guaranteed money, and different ways to structure those things to make everybody happy. And so overall, I think that we're getting a peak into the sausage making, and it makes people a little bit worried, because they like harmony. They don't like the back and forth or the quarrel between front office and player. The fans all want harmony. And so when we get a peek behind the scenes, we see a little bit of how the sausage is made, we get a little worried. It's just natural. So I think you let the process play out. Probably we'll have a contract in place, you know, before training camp, or maybe partway into training camp. I think that's still the most likely scenario. And then everybody walks away. Listen, if this were an easy negotiation, then somebody wasn't doing their job, you know, because contract negotiations are inherently antagonistic toward one another. Maybe that's not the correct word, but you've got sides looking out for their best interests, and your best interests are not aligned necessarily in these contract negotiations. So if you just had a completely easy peasy contract negotiation, then it means somebody wasn't really advocating strongly enough for their client. I think the best contract negotiations are the ones where everybody walks away from it just a little bit unhappy and feeling like they didn't get everything that they wanted.
Yeah, and I would say
that seems to be what we're headed for.
Yeah, and I would say this, if there wasn't this much, because everybody just thinks that all these guys are slotting in one behind the other, and they really aren't. They really are not. If there weren't this much diversity in all these contracts, I'm thinking maybe the structure is probably part of the holdup. Maybe they want something like Jalen Hurts's structure, and he wants something more like Jared Goff's, which is a little bit more straightforward. If you look at Trevor Lawrence's contract, I don't think that should be a bone of contention at all. His guaranteed money is $142 million. If Tua's willing to sign that, why wouldn't Chris Greer want him to sign it? But I think something's going to happen, because I don't see the alternative. The only acceptable alternative really makes them out to be a bunch of idiots. Because I think the only acceptable alternative is making him play on the fifth-year option. He plays well. He asks out, then you got to trade him, and then you're going to go pay Dak Prescott, because the Cowboys are a special kind of stupid right now, because they're not even paying CeeDee Lamb. So imagine that you play out the year, he asks for a trade, you send to New Orleans or the Raiders. Oddly enough, they got cap space next year. They're both playing domes. They both don't have quarterbacks. So makes perfect sense. And then you're going to go hand $60 million to Dak Prescott. You'd look like a complete total idiot if you were Chris Greer, if you did something like that. So I think everybody wants it done. So it will get done.
I don't know, though. Do they? I mean, what's the flip side? What happens if they don't pay him? He plays on the fifth year and then he gets injured and he misses 10 games, for example, which, you know, 7 out of the last 8 years, he's missed multiple games. What happens then? Who looks the idiot then? Like, it's a genuine question. Like, I'm not trying to be, you know, but it's a genuine question. At what point then do you sign into a contract? And also, like, I think we overblow the trade market a little bit in terms of, you know, you are going to have a very special coach build a very specialist offense for him specifically. I think if Tua was to be traded and Trevor Lawrence was to be traded at the same time, we would be more interested in Trevor Lawrence, because his ability to play in more diverse offenses is that, whereas Tua is not quite the same level, in my opinion. But I do think it's interesting to say that Chris Greer is an idiot if he doesn't do it. But then what happens if he suffers the same season next year as he had 2 seasons ago, where he has the 2/3 concussions?
Well, it depends on the consequences of that season that you're talking
Absolutely.
About. Like, are you talking about he misses 10 games and that means to the Miami Dolphins, the conclusion, which would be very different from what their current mindset is. Their current mindset is two is the guy, two is the guy, two is the guy. Right.
100%.
If it causes them to change that mindset and say, Tua is not the guy anymore, then they're going to have to move on.
But they think he's the guy now, except that there is a worry that injuries will could stop him being the guy. Not that he isn't the guy, but it's just that there is just a different set of scales with him because of his historical past with injuries that sets him apart.
But let's fast forward to that scenario that, you know, he's you are now questioning he's not the guy because and your reticence to get at that extension in for him. It worked. It sort of, you know, it didn't work out because it's, you know, obviously it's a bad scenario, but it's, you look a little bit wiser for not having signed him to that money because he's not the guy. You have to look at that in the broader context of, yeah, but what's also going to be happening with the entire team in that scenario? You know, in that scenario, like, can you just go out there and buy yourself a different quarterback and continue with this build? You know, this build of a team with a, you know, who are you going to get for that? And who's, I mean, because quarterbacks, we know this, they don't just grow on trees. You don't just get one available and come out of nowhere. You know, like, who do you get for that? And will he be good enough to induce you to try and continue with the build as it is instead of blowing up and starting over? Because remember, at any point, you can hit the self-destruct button in the NFL. You can take all your debts, all your, you know, debts against future salary caps. You can and you can blow it up and start acquiring assets and take all your dead cap charges in the 1 year. And then, you know, kind of start over, which is what Miami did. You know, is it realistic to think we're in the scenario where it's like, crap, Tua got injured again, or he's got more concussions and blah, blah, blah. He's not the guy. We're going to get another quarterback and we're going to continue on this build. Or are you just basically blowing up and starting over? Is that nuclear scenario?
But let's say he does get injured for 10 games next year. He can still be the guy, A, but B, no matter how we look at it, it's going to throw into some serious doubt whether or not he is the guy, right? Because for obvious, and therefore you're almost forced to blow it up because,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, no,
we don't want to blow it up, but I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I'm just saying that I don't think it's as black and white to say that Chris Greer is either an idiot if he doesn't get it signed. To me, it's a business, and you know, it's got to be right for the team as well as for the quarterback. And he just brings a different set of challenges in terms of how you work that guaranteed cash. And I think that, you know, yes, there's going to be some, not going to be, yes, there are. We know there are. There's some, you know, upset, irritated, nose put out joint people.
Mm-hmm.
Currently,
mm-hmm.
We all know this, and I'm sure it will get sorted. But I couldn't blame the Dolphins if they said, you know what, we just need to see a bigger sample size before we pay you $270 million. And if we have to bite the $300 million because you win us a Super Bowl and you're league MVP, then I can't believe they won't have sat in a meeting and gone, right, let's go through every single scenario. He gets hurt. He wins a Super Bowl. He wins the MVP. He plays average. He holds out. And they've gone through every single workaround on each of those things. I can't believe that they haven't done that. So they must be comfortable in a situation knowing, you know what, if we let him play on the fifth year, it's a massive risk to us. But he turns around and knocks it out of the park. It's win-win because, yeah, we win the Super Bowl. Oh, and we have to pay him. But we've won a Super Bowl and he's an MVP. So I don't know. I just think it's a really interesting challenge moving forwards. That
and not to make it even more complicated, but there's also the factor that, you know, there's a lot of undercurrent of, I'd say, consternation in the league about the constantly increasing proportion of salary cap that's going to the quarterbacks.
The quarterbacks, right? Absolutely.
And it's just every year it's a
step up.
Well,
to the point
up,
where
it's
it got
a step up and another step up.
It got proposed by some owner that that they might have a separate salary cap for the quarterback position.
Right. And so at some point, you know, in order to stop that, at some point, some, you know, some poor asshole is going to have to step up to the plate and say, you know, no more of this, you know, escalator going up on all the quarterbacks, where every single quarterback sets a new market and so on and so forth. And, you know, who knows if Miami is thinking that they're that team. And the second complicating factor is, you know, just look at, we were just arguing about this, not arguing, but we were discussing it earlier on OnlyFans. You know, look at the way that Miami's offense is regarded from a personnel standpoint around the league, versus, you know, their offensive ranking, their number one offense in the NFL. And yet, if you look at last year, the individual pieces, you know, where was Tua ranked among the quarterbacks in Jeremy Fowler's, you know, survey to NFL executives, NFL personnel executives that he does every year? He was like 15th down the list, you know. Of course, Tyreek Hill ranked number four, but, you know, Jalen Waddle was in his honorable mentions. He wasn't in the top 10. He was number 15 or so. Teron Armstead, we know the story there. You know, go down the list, and Miami's personnel isn't well regarded. Why? Yet they perform really well. So why? And it's because of the mystique, the economic moat around Mike McDaniel as an offensive, you know, quote unquote guru, right? And this is great in contracts, because it lets you keep your payroll pretty low while performing pretty well. But Miami might be saying, you know, hey, this is what we're doing. This is our model as a team. We're going to underpay the offense because Mike McDaniel runs a great offense no matter what. And you're not getting away with that if you're going ahead and setting the market with Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback. You know, this is part of Simon's devil's advocate, I would say. But, you know, maybe that's what they're saying. And it would be along the lines of what Simon said, where, you know, hey, this is a special situation for Tua, that he might not find anywhere else, that he might not find in other places. And we want his contract to reflect that. And you know, I'll tell you what, if that's their attitude, then Tua is not going to be very happy about it. And he would have a right to be.
Hmm. There's a flip side, though, to the flip side, right, which is that, you know, they run the risk of, you know, Alf, you mentioned Dak Prescott, you know, that they could pull a trigger on a big escalator contract on Prescott that could fall into the Jared Goff plus ballpark. The other one is Jordan Love. You know, yeah. Green Bay, it feels like Green Bay are ready to pull the trigger. You know, there aren't many quarterbacks who played as well as Jordan Love for the last 10 games of the season and the playoffs. You know, to do what he did in Dallas, and almost, you know, beat the 49ers, save for the final play of the game. You know, they are absolutely beholden to him being the next, you know, Favre/Rodgers. You know, he could come and blow the doors off the market in terms of, you know, and then you're setting yourself up for a, you know, imagine those two deals happen this week. Imagine if one of them happens this week. Imagine if Jordan Love happens this week and he goes at $285 million. You know, Tua's camp all of a sudden is like, whoa, you know?
Right.
I mean, this
and
is...
At that point, if you're the Dolphins, and almost, it would be weird almost in a, like a good way, in that you might get the capitulation, you know? Because if you get capitulation, you know, there's value to having this done, right? There is value to having this done. You're not having a guy playing a fifth-year option. You're not having this weird situation where the team are even teammates of his are like, you know, why, what's with this reluctance to pay the man? He's earned it. You know, you don't have Tua second guessing himself about whether he should play through injuries or whether he should take that hit or just turf the ball or, you know, stuff like that. There's value in that. And so if Jordan Love does get done, it could be a situation where they're like, you know, hey, this is the market. I'm sorry. It's a losing game. We're trying to fight against the tide.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it gets done because of that.
Yeah, and you also have one thing that not many people have spoken about, and I think we could end it right here. They've played six games without him. Their quarterback rating in those six games without him the last 2 years is 66. The other 31 games with him, 102.1. So it's double the quarterback rating. My
Yeah,
fear
it's a
is
double-edged
that
sword.
they're my
It's a double-edged
fear.
sword. Remember Simon saying, you know, what can Tua play in another offense, right? And that's a valid question. But who plays in this offense? You know, who plays in this offense and has the timing, the footwork, choreography, the exact things that this offense been built on?
I'm wondering if they're running the risk of pissing Tua off and he just decides, you know what, I'm just going to go put up the same numbers I've put up the last 2 years that will get me paid in Las Vegas or New Orleans and, you know, trade me or pay me a ridiculous amount and now I'm holding you up and you're not going to get the best Tua if you do that, I think, for this season. I got to think that if they're fighting over $4 or $5 million in guaranteed money, you know, then they're fighting over the wrong thing. I think it has to be over structure, which can be a pretty big holdup. I explained it on the short-term capital gains, how it works with Jalen Hurts. I don't know how the hell Jalen Hurts signed that contract he did, but it allows the Eagles to keep going to the free agency well every single year. So maybe that's something that Chris Greer is planning. We know there's 14 days. Jeff Darlington did kind of sound a little bit more conciliatory tone today on ESPN. Said, oh, they're working, you know, they're working. We shall see. We got 14 days. Next week, we're going to operate as if they don't have a contract with Tua Tagovailoa because I'm pretty sure if he does sign that contract, it'll occupy the first half of the show. But next week, we will get into all of the camp battles. There's more than you think, by the way. Okay. There's more than meets the eye to this roster. There's a few guys that have been mainstays that I believe could be in some danger. We'll talk about it next week. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.